Good morning. I'm going to call to order the meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. We'll start by having the clerk take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon, Vice Chair. Representative Franson. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Heintzman.
Here.
Representative Morrison.
Here.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Wasilek.
Present.
Representative West is excused.
So we do have a quorum, and so I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our meeting on March 7th. Anyone willing to do that?
So moved.
Representative Bonner moves approval of our minutes from March 7th. Any additions or corrections or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes of our meeting from March 7th are approved. So, members, we have two bills on the agenda this morning. They both relate to school-based early childhood instruction and programming. A note, and I'll circle back to this at the end, but I want to make sure to note that we're getting crunched calendar-wise, so members should plan that next week especially, maybe especially heavy. We've had notice sent out for a likely meeting on Monday morning and evening of the 19th, the 21st, potentially the 22nd. We're going to try to get through things as efficiently as we can, but just to recognize that we're starting to really get into some crunch time here. And we'll make notes of other points as well at the end. So why don't we call up Representative Bernardi for the first bill, House File 1590. I should note that this proposal is included in both the governor's budget proposal and also in House File 1. So folks may remember we heard Article 3 of House File 1 last week. This is now Article 4 of House File 1 in the form of House File 1590. So we promised we'd be getting back to it, and we are today. So can I have a motion to put House File 1590 in front of us?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Okay, Representative Pryor moves House File 1590 for possible inclusion in a division report. And so, Representative Bernardi, we've got the bill in front of us, and so could you please explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this hearing today. I really feel like this is a hearing for all of us, because many of us across the state represent constituents, our earliest learners who aren't what's called the School Readiness Plus program. And they have been receiving funding, and this bill requests that we continue ongoing funding. And so from greater Minnesota to the suburbs to the urban area, we all share this important bill that we need to pass this year. And what it does is it just extends the funded voluntary print pre-kindergarten, which is called School Readiness Plus program slots, for fiscal year 2020. After as the fiscal year 2019 level of participants. And otherwise it would like reduce by about half. And these are really targeted students who qualify for this program. It's had bipartisan support. It made it into a House bill last year and passed through those efforts. And I just really encourage you to support this bill. And I brought some amazing testifiers from my district who work with our youngest learners and help get them ready for school. Okay. So with that, I have their, of course, it's not popping up at my fingertips, but I will let our Rachel Starkweather. Suquether. Oh my goodness. A preschool teacher. Do they call you that at school?
Miss Rachel.
Miss Rachel, yeah. Because I'm like, I can't even do that. Preschool teacher at Mounds View Schools.
Thank you,
Ms. Bernardi. Ms. Rachel, if you can spell your last name. We do have to get that for the record, and then
it's
please.
Starkweather, Starkweather.
Okay, then please proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today. I am a preschool teacher for the Mounds View School District, and I am here today in support of this bill, HF 1590, because I truly believe in the importance of early education and see the profound impacts it has on children and their families. I knew my whole life I was going to be a teacher, and this passion has never ceased to fade. I chose to go to school as well as graduate school for early childhood education because I was fascinated with the whys and the hows of children learning. The science behind brain development and how I could help make connections that would set the stage for learning years to come was very powerful. I recently read an article by Dr. Jason Yeatman at the University of Washington, and he says that it's underappreciated that teachers in early years are brain engineers who help kids build new connections and circuits in the brain. Preschool teachers are brain engineers. How cool is that? That is my job. I'm a brain engineer. Moundsview Public Schools preschool programming falls under the early childhood family education umbrella. So this means we work with the entire family when a child comes to preschool. Our preschool program is well regarded. We have waiting lists for almost all of our classes. The need for funding for this type of programming is great in our district. Once a family joins our program, we start the journey by doing a home visit. We continue the relationship with the family through family events at preschool and parent education opportunities. We truly honor and believe in the strength of family relationships, and families continue to seek out our preschool programs. Far beyond academic skills, my personal drive for teaching preschool and my passion every day is that public preschool helps children set the foundation for social and emotional preparedness. For most of our students, this is their first school setting that they have ever experienced. My job is to help prepare kids for what it means to be a student. At the top of the priority list in early learning is helping children to develop self-regulation skills. This is where being that brain engineer becomes very vital. Our job as preschool teachers is to weave techniques that help form complex connections in the brain into everything we do. It's important to remember these skills do not happen naturally in child development. They are very intentionally taught. This is the number one reason that public preschool is so necessary. We provide a space for children and their families to learn and practice these skills in a very diverse setting of peers. Students leave preschool with tools that help create equality among all kids entering kindergarten, regardless of home language spoken, socioeconomic background, and other varying special needs. This funding is crucial to help provide these opportunities for our kids, especially our underserved populations. Preschool seems so simple. It's a safe place for kids to play and learn. However, the complexities of what is happening every single day go far beyond play. Our collaboration with families, along with the intentionality behind all play and activities, make preschool the most integrative and in-depth building block for education. I support this bill because there is nothing more powerful and important in this world than helping create joyful, lifelong learners, and that begins in preschool. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you, Representative Bernardi, for this bill.
Thank you. And our next testifier is Jessica Rowe, and she's one of our primary years program preschool teachers at Fridley Public Schools. Welcome.
Ms. Rowe, if you can spell your last name, too, and then please proceed.
Sure. It's R-O-W.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jessica Rowe, and I'm a preschool teacher at Fridley at the Fridley Community Center. I'm here today in support of this bill to make School Readiness Plus funding permanent and the next bill regarding the importance of pre-K licensing. Thank you, Representative Bernardi, for offering this bill and Representative Sandell for your bill. I was recently given the remarkable opportunity to be part of Educators Brought Together as the work of Education Minnesota's Educator Policy Innovation Center, aka EPIC. EPIC brings together teams of educators to provide research-proven solutions to challenges faced in our schools. I am very proud of the work that our team did and want to share some findings with you today. I also want to share my personal experience as a preschool teacher and how the School Readiness Plus funding has benefited my students. Prior to age 5, a child's brain is more malleable, making early childhood education crucial for our children. They are like little sponges and soak up a great deal of information during the course of a school year. They enhance their cognitive, social, and emotional skills that will prepare them for the rest of their lives. The first 5 years of life is when most of the brain development occurs. Upon researching short and long-term benefits of high-quality preschool education, it was shown that there is up to a 30% reduction in achievement gap, higher math and reading performance, improved achievement in K-1 for our second language learners, lower rates of teen pregnancy, more stable family lives, and a higher high school graduation rate. Currently, Minnesota ranks 37th among all states in terms of percentages of 4-year-olds enrolled in a state-funded preschool. Ranking below us includes 6 states that offer no program at all. The percentage of 4-year-olds enrolled in a state-funded preschool has risen from 1% in 2006 to 6% in 2017. There are still so many additional families that could be served if we only had permanent source of funding. In order to ensure that a quality program is in place, there are quality benchmarks that must be in place There are seven specific factors that the EPIC committee felt were important. They are licensed early childhood teachers, programs running as public school offerings, curriculum that is age-appropriate and aligned with the Minnesota ESIPs, class capped at 20 students with a ratio of 10 to 1, vision, hearing, and health screening and referral, family outreach and wraparound services, and administrators and paraprofessionals trained in age-appropriate education for early learners. Now that I have given you a short synopsis into what we have found as an EPIC team, I want to share what the School Readiness Plus funding has done for my district. In 2013, our preschool program started with two sections, a morning and an afternoon class with less than 20 students in each class. Fast forward to this year, we now have seven sections with 20 students in each section. Families who live in Fridley and the surrounding cities show a strong desire to send their child to preschool, which is apparent by the multiple families still on a wait list in March to get into our program. Fridley is funded with both VPK dollars as well as the School Readiness Plus funding. The kindergarten teachers in our district have told us it's apparent which students did PYP preschool and which have not. The students who have gone through our program entering into kindergarten knowing how to do school. Our students leave our program knowing how to walk in the hallway, sit for a 20-minute story, engage in meaningful conversations, advocate their wants and needs, and much, much more. Every year at graduation, I'm astonished at how much my students have grown and matured in just one short year. I send them into summer break knowing that they are ready to tackle the world when they get to kindergarten. This would not be possible without the permanent funding of School Readiness Plus. I hope that you will consider making this funding permanent. The waitlist for our families to enroll and how much our program has grown in the last 5 years proves that there is a strong desire for preschool not only in Fridley, but in the state of Minnesota. As mentioned earlier, having licensed pre-K teachers is vital to ensuring a quality program. Make no mistake, the research that shows the tremendous advantages to communities that invest pre-K suggests that those benefits only occur when the programs are of high enough quality. And one of the most consistent markers of a high-quality program is that its educators are licensed, that they have the robust training in both content and pedagogy, and that they have access to ongoing professional development that is aligned to state standards. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Representative Bernardi, are those all the testifiers you have on this bill?
All the ones that I have personally asked to come with my colleagues, and then we have more people that obviously that would like to testify on this bill.
Okay. If there are members of the public who wish to testify, if they can please come forward. And thank you to both of your testifiers. So I have the first, we'll have the gentleman just sat down to Representative Bernardi's right. So we'll have you start, and then we'll go to the other side. So please, sir, identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Fred Nolan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Okay. Happy to appear in support of 1590. Our platform has a whole section on early learning. Early learning is a major concern and interest of our members, as you heard just now, how important it is. There are over 60 school districts in Minnesota, plus charter schools, that are facing a cliff on June 30. When they drive over that cliff, there is no more funding for 4,000 students. In our platform, the very first thing we say is, at a minimum, this funding needs to continue. Those communities are invested in it, those families are looking forward to it, and the school board members and administrators know the value of it. You would not want to trade your seats here today for those 60 school board seats, 60 times 6, imagine that, 360 school board seats, trying to figure out your budget for next year. Because you are invested in the classrooms, you have teachers, your community is ready for it, they're used to it, and yet you have to find a place in your budget for that funding. That's going to be a very difficult choice. I believe they will make the choice to fund it, but they may have to make other cuts, which are going to be very difficult. This is something that I think is a commitment of the state for you to continue. Have more than half the school districts are in rural Minnesota. Please support 1590. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And then to the left of Representative Bernardi, please identify yourself and please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Annette Salmon, and I am the Community Education Director for Stillwater Area Public Schools. And I'm here representing the Minnesota Community Education Association to share our thoughts about House File 1590. Voluntary preschool and School Readiness Plus offer families a community-based program in which their child can have the best start to their academic career. Giving families a preschool experience that includes transportation, student and family supports, and aligned curriculum in the classroom of their peers ensures the type of holistic support structure that we know is needed to establish long-term student success. School Readiness Plus funding has had positive and tangible impacts, allowing schools to increase access for students to attend preschool, prepare students for kindergarten through active play and engagement in social emotional learning, while also laying a strong foundation for language, literacy, and mathematics achievement. Collaborate with student support services, such as special education, ELL, and social workers, to identify and support students' needs early. And develop partnerships with families early on to support learning at home and ultimately transition successfully to kindergarten. Families have encountered positive experiences of getting to know their neighborhood school even before kindergarten. Without this funding, many families would struggle to participate in preschool as other early education funding sources are limited, and some families do not have the discretionary income to pay for fee-based preschool. Stabilizing these funds will ensure that school districts are positioned to build on these very important programs while continuing to align curriculum, hire and retain high-quality staff, and secure appropriate space to ensure the systems and structures are working together to create the best outcomes for students. In conclusion, Minnesota Community Education Association supports parent choice and student access to safe, high-quality early childhood education and care. Stable funding allows school districts, Head Start, and child care programs the ability to commit to families and teachers, which advances the goal of providing high-quality programming. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Anyone else? Looks like we've got another testifier. Please identify yourself for the record once you sit down, and then please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Lori Erickson. I'm proud to represent the St. Paul Public Schools, where we are a four-star parent-aware rated pre-kindergarten program. First and foremost, thank you, Representative Bernardi, for bringing this forward. Voluntary pre-K funding represents 344 seats in the St. Paul Public Schools. It is incredible. To date, we serve over 1,900 pre-kindergarten students whose enrollment is prioritized to reflect free and reduced lunch, second language learners, and early childhood special education students. We have procedures in place to ensure that our homeless and highly mobile families and children have a program option within the St. Paul Public Schools. It is these families that benefit the most from our program as we remove as many barriers as possible to prioritize enrollment to meet the needs of our community. Thanks to voluntary pre-K in combination with other funding sources, the St. Paul Public Schools are able to offer free early childhood screening to every child, free breakfast, transportation, family engagement and education opportunities that strengthen the school-to-home relationship, and ease transition for students and their parents. We have instructional coaching for both our fully licensed pre-kindergarten teachers as well as their administrators, enhanced PBIS coaching and professional development for our teachers, administrators, as well as our community partners. We have strong partnership with mental health agencies such as LifeTrack and Fraser to meet the changing needs of our community. And last but not least, we are funding bilingual support staff that are making the critical connection between folks that look like me that don't necessarily represent our community and build that strong partnership. The St. Paul Public Schools has created a play-based, parent-aware rated curriculum known as Discovering Our World. And I am in awe of the teachers that spoke this morning. Bravo to you. Amazing. I am going to bring back the brain engineer comment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use that. The materials are aligned to the 2017 ESIPs, and we feature personalized learning opportunities for our students.
If you were to walk into any one of our classrooms right now, we are engrossed in an area of study called creating and constructing. And you will see children building sculptures, painting murals, creating anything that their heart is desired to do, all under the guidance of instructional leadership of strong, strong educators. Because of that, their social emotional needs are being met. And because of the high engagement, we have a very strong track record of meeting our literacy and math targets as set by our district. As mentioned, we serve over 1,900 students. That's incredible, absolutely incredible. Within our city, however, there are 4,000 four-year-old children. So it's incumbent upon us to create community partnerships. And I'm proud to tell you that we partner very closely with 13 child cares within our area. We partner with Head Start and other agencies such as LifeTrack, Fraser, and St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, just to name a few. With the continuation of voluntary pre-K funding, the St. Paul Public Schools is poised to ensure that the achievement of our most needy learners is being met. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson, and thanks for your service to St. Paul Schools as a St. Paul public school parent. So thank you. any other public testimony? And seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Do members have any questions? So Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just heard a little bit from St. Paul Public Schools, and I had a question for the bill author, if maybe Representative Bernardi could dig into this a little bit. I'm looking at a 2016 story in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and it just kind of goes through how the funding was distributed system-wide. And I'm just curious if this bill is different than the bill that was passed years ago and how those dollars are distributed, or is it the same?
Representative Bernardi.
Okay, I'm not going to be able to answer that whole question. I do know, as I understand this bill, the first go-around was the most targeted students that needed it, and then the next bill was the next level of targeting that needed it. I don't know. That's what I understand it to be, but I don't know any of the other.
Representative Heitzman, or maybe somebody else who can. Representative Heitzman, I'll let you.
Chair, there might be somebody that could answer the question, but the number that we have, I think that this is supposed to help, if this bill passes, is 7,160 participants for fiscal year 20. Well, it would fill in the blank a little bit different there on line 4.5. And I'm just wanting to confirm that that number is accurate, or is there potential for this situation? And this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but we'd like to make sure that folks understand the information. And if we have a scenario where, like in the St. Paul school system, it was reported that $604,000 was enough to pay for 78 seats, but was actually diverted to other parts of the program, other parts of the school's needs system-wide. And if this number is accurate, great. If it's actually going to be significantly less, I'd like just to know.
Okay, so we have someone.
Representative Bernardi, and it looks like we have somebody St. Paul Schools who may be able to address this. If you could identify yourself for the record, and then proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think the issue about.
Let me just identify yourself, Ms.
Gilbert. Yeah. I'm Mary Gilbert Doherty from the St. Paul Public Schools. So when the VPK program started originally, it targeted the highest SES concentration of low-income schools. So one of our schools that had been receiving, had been funded with our referendum dollars, qualified for the VPK dollars. So we added seats to that school, but we also took some of our referendum money and funded a school that also had a high SES school. So we did, in fact, add seats to eligible students based on free and reduced lunch that year, because we have a broad program that we had been serving. So in the School Readiness Plus language, the state said that the money should be used to provide additional services to students. And so with the School Readiness Plus funding that we got, we did add additional seats, or we converted half-day programs to all-day programs. So we did, in fact, increase the number of students that were being served with the VPK money.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to drill down a little bit here so I completely understand, I don't want to misunderstand this story. This story specifically says that the district planned to hire 10 to 15 assistants for kindergarten classrooms. So I'm trying to understand if, because there was already funding in place, were they able to divert that funding to other parts of programming?
Ms. Doherty.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, so the way the funding, the VPK funding worked originally, you had to do an application and the ranking was based on the concentration of free and reduced lunch. So we made an application for that school. Because we were awarded VPK money for that school, we were then able to take the funding that we had for that school and fund a whole other program of a school that, didn't receive VPK money because there was a limited number of dollars. So we used that money to increase the number of seats to high-risk students in the St. Paul Public Schools. We fund the programs with a teacher and a para, and if there are special education students also in that room, sometimes they require an additional paraprofessional as well. But all of the funding that we received was not spent on anything other than VPK and high-risk students. It did not go back to the general fund or was used for something else.
Representative Heintzman here.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question has been answered, but what I hear you saying is that this story is not accurate and that this information that the district planned to hire 10 to 15 teaching assistants, is you're telling me that didn't happen.
Ms. Doherty.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I think what I said was that we have always used the additional money that we have received from either VPK, School Readiness Plus, to add additional slots for our students that meet the high-risk targets or to move from a half-day program to an all-day program.
I wonder if Ms. Doherty is familiar with the article that Representative Heintzman is referencing. Ms. Doherty, are you familiar with that article?
I'm certainly willing to take a look at that and meet with you offline about it. I haven't looked at that.
So, okay, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. So what I'm really just trying to find out is when we say we're going to be funding, it appears as though an additional or this funding specifically will address the needs of 7,160 kids that currently don't have this pre-kindergarten programming. I just want to make sure that that number accurately represents what this funding will do. If there's already funding in place and we're already, let's say, for example, maybe there's 1,000 kids, maybe there's 100, I don't know. I'm just wanting to drill down and I want to understand, is this funding going directly to make sure that these 7,160 participants going forward have a place in a pre-K program, or are we just supplementing or supplanting funding that's already there on the ground?
And I see Mr. Nolan from the Rural Education Association appears to want to respond to this, so we'll direct it to Mr. Nolan if Representative Bernardi's okay with that. Mr. Nolan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Highsmith. I cannot speak for St. Paul, but the way the program worked, Mary Gilbert was right. Schools had to apply by site, and it's dependent on your free and reduced lunch population. There are approximately 4,000 seats that funding will expire. Those schools did not have the four-year-old VPK program or School Readiness Plus program in those sites in rural Minnesota, I believe in the Twin Cities as well, until they got the funding. They did have to make application. They made some very difficult choices in schools like Wilmer, where maybe a couple elementaries qualified and others didn't. But districts that tried to apply, like Bemidji, for all their elementaries, because their average free and reduced lunch was a little lower, they got none of the schools. So the second time, schools learned you have to apply by site. So all I can say for greater Minnesota is these schools did not have the programming before. They have it today. They've had it for 2 years. And half that number, about 4,000 of those spots, the funding will disappear June 30. 4 years ago, the VPK program started. That funding is ongoing. So you have districts with no funding. You have districts with continuous funding. And we're talking about the districts that have had funding for 2 years and now it's going to drop off. So I hope that clarifies the question.
Representative Heintzman, follow up on that? Or?
Sure, yes. Yeah, please. I appreciate that, Mr. Yeah. Chair. So I really appreciate your testimony this morning, you know, explaining where we're at in greater Minnesota. I already knew that.
Okay, thank you.
I want to know what's happening system-wide, and if we're talking about 7,160 students that will be affected by this, is it the same in greater Minnesota as it is in other parts of the state? And maybe that's something we could work on offline with the bill author just to make sure that the monies are going exactly whereas we think they are to establishing or continuing to allow these students to access this program. And if it is that number, great. If their monies are being diverted in some systems to other places, I would at least like to know that.
And it looks like maybe Representative Bernardi or Ms. Gilbert Doherty may have something to add from some more metro perspective on that.
Okay, so, well, I've been working on this for a while now since this program started, and these are specifically for 4,000 students who are currently in the program, and as I understand from one of the testifiers, half of it goes to Greater Minnesota currently of these 4,000 students, and he would have to verify if that's accurate, but I heard him say half of it goes to Greater Minnesota. And so it's the 4,000 students that are currently in the program that the funding expires this year in May. And so we want to keep that going so those school districts across Minnesota do not lose the funding for those students to participate in this very important program.
And I know we've got Ms. Snyder from the Department of Education. Looks like she's going to add something, add a perspective on this as well. So Ms. Snyder, can you identify yourself and then please?
Caitlin Snyder, Minnesota Department of Education. Current law, there are four pots of funding for the voluntary pre-K funding. So there is a rural pot, a metro pot that's defined as Minneapolis and St. Paul, a suburban pot, and a pot for the charter schools. The money is divided between these four pots based on the student enrollment. So every pot gets their fair share of funding depending on what their student enrollment is overall. The bill in front of you would split the Minneapolis and St. Paul pots into respective pots. Does that answer?
Representative Heintzman, is that? It looks like Ms. Yeah, please. And I think Ms. Gilbert Doherty is going to want to add something for St. Paul. We'll let you, Member Heintzman, continue then.
I didn't realize this was going to be so difficult. I feel like folks understand, or maybe they have already an idea what they would like to, how they would like to respond. I just want to know that the money is going directly to funding these programs and not supplying or supplanting what's already in place.
And let's give Ms. Gilbert Doherty, looks like you want to clarify.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Heintzman, what the department, Ms. Caitlin, said was, St. Paul and Minneapolis get 10% of the pot of money based on our kindergarten share, not on the percentage of kids that are free and reduced lunch. So the distribution around the state is based on a proportional share of kindergarten students. If there was a share, so we get, that's at roughly 10%. So Minneapolis and St. Paul of that pot split about 10% of the money that is available under current law, even though we have a much higher proportion of kids that are in poverty. And the reason that that was decided that way was so that the money would be split and available around the whole state. So that's what the current law says. So it also says that you can't use the money to supplant current spots. And so when we took BPK money and school readiness money, the St. Paul Public Schools used that to expand the number of services that we have in our school by adding additional seats or adding hours to our seats, and we also have community partners. So what this bill does is simply continue what Chairman Loon negotiated with Governor Dayton as part of the 2017 package that provided a different formula than VPK, the VPK program, because the issue there was that they wanted to have some flexibility to have some relationships with childcare and Head Start, and also to ensure that the funding would continue to be based on need or based on free and reduced lunch. So that's the way the program works.
So can we simply confirm, though, the funding that's going to voluntary pre-K and School Readiness Plus is going to those programs? If districts choose, such as St. Paul, to put some money on top to add even more slots, they can. But I believe Representative Heintzman is asking, we'll make sure to confirm this, is that the money isn't being diverted to some other purpose. It's going to the school-based preschool programming as directed under those two programs. And Representative Bernardi and maybe you can confirm that on behalf of your testifiers.
I just want to say that this, to retain the same number of funded voluntary pre-K readiness plus program spots, that we're in 2019, this continues ongoing funding for those slots for 4,000 students that would lose those slots after this year. Does that help answer? That's pretty more of a straightforward answer.
Representative Heintzman.
I think that's going to be the best we can get.
It seems like for now, it seems like it is Representative Heintzman, but please feel free to continue and testify as well. And I've got somebody's Representative Damuth over on this side. Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bernardi, can you just tell me how many students currently enrolled in the VPK qualify for free and reduced program?
Representative Bernardi, if you know, or you may need to
phone a friend. I would assume.
Like Ms. Snyder's on her way up, it looks like.
Right.
So, Ms. Snyder, if you know or can help us with that.
Caitlin Snyder, Minnesota Department of Education. The funding goes out to the four different pots, so the concentration of free and reduced price lunch students, eligible students, varies among the four pots. I believe we've pulled this information fairly recently, and I can resend it to the committee.
Okay. You don't remember offhand, it sounds like.
I don't remember for the four pots off the top of my head. No.
Okay. Please do send that. I don't know if there's somebody else who knows, but otherwise, please do send that along to us.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. And looks like then that may end up being it. I should note, especially for members of the public, that Representative Bernardi is in fact Chair Bernardi, Chair of the Higher Education Committee, and I'm grateful to her for her interest in the other end of the development education spectrum, because of course, getting kids off to a great start at the beginning helps in the area that you work in. So thank you so much, and we'll let you get the final word then, Representative Bernardi.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill today. I am so proud, and you know, I kind of teared up a little bit when the shout out to the teachers from my community, because our community takes this very serious, and I am under the understanding that people take this very serious across the state in getting our youngest learners the best start possible. And so I would love to continue this bipartisan support and continue the funding for these slots for this program throughout our state, and would appreciate your support and encourage you to sign on to the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. And so with that, I believe it was Representative Pryor. She renews her motion to have House File 1590 laid over for possible inclusion in a division report. So thank you so much. And Representative Sandell, you are up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And this is House File 1512, and so I'll entertain a motion to put House File 1512 in front of us. And Representative Khadija Batoon moves House File 1512 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Sandell, to your bill, sir.
Well, good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. Thanks very much for the opportunity to be here this morning and speak on behalf of House File 1512. I serve on other committees with many of you, and it's fun to see so many familiar faces around the table. I know that we agree that teacher licensing and training are important issues. We're here this morning because we share our dedication to early childhood learning. We're looking for the best ways to foster, encourage, and direct the imagination, cognition, and emotional center of each child. I support House File 1512 because I'm convinced that a degree-centered program combining research, classroom, discussion, clinical experience, analysis, and review are the best ways for each teacher to prepare for their career. And that's including, of course, those who teach our youngest students, that such a program would meet the licensure requirements of Minnesota Rules Chapter 1810. Additionally, I support this legislation because of the foundation that it gives to the teaching profession, including early childhood teachers in school district contracts as equals with other professional educators, attracting dedicated young men and women to work that's often gone unrewarded or underappreciated. I'm joined today by four wonderful professionals in the field of brain engineering and early childhood education: Rebecca Lewis and Kelsey Pinot of South Washington County, District 833, serving in part the All-American City of Woodbury, and Kathy Viemeyer and Jennifer Wartick, serving someplace called Eden Prairie. I told them I was going to say a joke. It wasn't going to be very funny, but
You just had to plug Woodbury, too, didn't you, Representative Sandell? Yeah, always on message.
Thank you. I'm confident you'll find their experience and their testimony relevant, inspiring, and supportive to House File 1512. Thank you.
So we'll have our first testifier. Please identify yourself, and then please begin your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Kelsey Pinault, spelling P-I-N-A-U-L-T. Good morning, Chair Pinto and representatives of the committee. I am both a preschool teacher in South Washington County Schools and a parent of a preschooler. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak to you today on behalf of the licensed preschool teachers in my district. I believe strongly that the state should require licenses for teachers in public preschool programs. What comes to your mind when you think of a preschool classroom? Is it the array of toys, colorful Play-Doh, possibly stimulating art activities? Whatever you're picturing, it probably looks fun. A licensed preschool teacher with a depth of knowledge in early childhood development sees much more than that. They see play-based learning with planned opportunities for children to learn fine motor skills, friendship skills, problem-solving skills, and so much more. A high-quality preschool classroom is full of experiences that are preparing kiddos not only for success in kindergarten, but success for life. The training I received in my teacher preparation program armed me with the skills, expertise, and strategies to be an effective teacher. If a student is having trouble expressing their emotions in an appropriate way, I have a toolkit of ideas ready to help them. For my students who receive special education services, I know how to differentiate their instruction and execute their individualized education plans. Parents in the South Washington County School District expect the best when they send their kiddos to our program, but I'm sure their trust in the quality of our program will change when they find out they're sending their children to a preschool that no longer requires a licensed teacher. Without this bill, preschool teachers can also be removed from the teacher bargaining unit. This is already happening in South Washington County. That means the district can pay less and give fewer workplace protections than other teacher colleagues because we no longer have bargaining rights. To teach every other age group in public schools from birth to adult, you have to have a license, but not to teach our earliest learners, and that makes no sense. So please pass House File 1512 to ensure our earliest learners have well-prepared preschool teachers who are also treated the same as the rest of the teachers in their building. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And so we'll have the second testifier. Please identify yourself, and then please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Lewis, L-E-W-I-S. I'm a preschool teacher in South Washington County School District. I have a bachelor's degree in elementary and early childhood education from Winona State University. Early childhood education is so important, and that's why I decided to make it my focus when I got my degree. I had to complete more credits, attend school longer, and take out more student loans, but I knew that extra preparation and effort would be worth it. My college courses taught me about child development, how to conduct authentic assessments and work with students with disabilities, about cultural diversity and the importance of equity and behavior management. All of these are vital skills for any teacher inside any classroom. I decided to put my early childhood license to use after 6 years working in various school settings and grades. I worked with students who were struggling and felt like if I had had the opportunity to work with them sooner, they might have been more successful. Many kiddos come into my classroom just starting to learn how to play well with others, gain problem-solving skills, and so much more. Some students receive special education services, and I am equipped to tailor my teaching to their needs while also teaching other students the importance of empathy and different learning styles. This job takes patience, flexibility, and the many skills and strategies I learned in college during class, practicum, and student teaching experiences. I know my training matters when I see my students leave my classroom at the end of the year with strong social, emotional, and academic foundation ready to tackle kindergarten. It's unfortunate our state law doesn't recognize the importance of having highly trained teachers in these public preschool programs. Every other teacher working with infants through adults in our public schools needs to have a license. It should also be mandatory for those working with our earliest learners in our public preschool programs. My school district, South Washington County, decided to no longer require licenses for preschool teachers because of our state law. Not only does it lower the standards for our preschool teachers, it means we no longer have a contract because we can't belong to our union anymore. This makes it easier for the school district to lower our wages and benefits and to stabilize the profession. Please vote for House File 1512 and recognize the importance of having highly qualified teachers in our early education programs. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. You have other testifiers, Representative Sandell?
I have two others, thank you.
Okay, we'll have the next testifier please come on up, introduce yourself, and then please begin. Whomever will have the person sitting to your right, I guess, Representative Sandell, go first. So please identify yourself, and please proceed.
My name is Jennifer Wartick, W-A-R-T-I-C-K. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Wartick. I'm a preschool teacher with Eden Prairie Schools, as well as a parent of a preschooler. I have been teaching for 9 years with a bachelor's degree in early childhood education and hold licensure in both early childhood education and early childhood special education. I have a huge passion for early education, and that passion took me on to get my master's degree this past summer with Concordia St. Paul. A large focus of my education was on developmentally appropriate practices. These practices are key for the success of our students in preschool as well as they continue their education. Every morning I greet each student by name with a smile on my face as they enter the classroom. It is my goal to develop a love of learning inside each of the students because it is where their education journey begins. In Eden Prairie, our focus is on each child, and that helps drive me every day as I think about my lessons, activities, and the interactions I have. Through my education, I've met many other educators who hold this passion and joy for their careers and the children they serve. These educators are not given the same things as their colleagues who teach in the K-12 setting. By supporting this bill, you will be showing that early childhood educators are just as important and possess all the qualifications of our colleagues. This validation is needed in order to maintain strong, passionate teachers for our youngest learners. Having a license is important to meet the needs of each child I see. Students come in with various background knowledge, social-emotional skills, and academic knowledge. Our training has made us experts in developmentally appropriate practice, assessments, and data. And this training allows us to make referrals for special education services and early intervention. Training and being licensed matters. It matters for the ninth grade teacher who is dealing with students who are changing and growing, and it matters for special education teachers, and it matters for pre-K teachers. Knowing how our youngest learners learn and develop is important. Knowing how to teach the youngest learners at one of the most critical phases in their life is something we should all support. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We have a question. Representative Cotizo-Watun, you will hold off. Yeah, I'm inclined to make it through testimony, and then we'll move to member questions. So thank you so much for your testimony, and then now to their fourth testifier. Please identify yourself and begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Vemeyer, V as in Victor, E-H-M-E-I-E-R. I have been teaching preschool for Eden Prairie School since 2011. I have a bachelor's degree in early childhood education, and I've been teaching for over 20 years. Something I love about teaching in Eden Prairie is the district's vision on personalized learning and the focus on each student. Not every student, each student. This includes our youngest learners. We align preschool to kindergarten in Eden Prairie. As a preschool teacher, I have the same job expectations as my kindergarten teaching colleagues that I align with. The question is, why do our youngest learners not need highly trained teachers with teaching license? Because I have been teaching for over 20 years, I have had many experiences with colleagues who have left preschool teaching because of pay and contract terms while still being held to the same standards as their K-3 teacher colleagues. We are a child's first experience with what school is, what it looks like, and how it works. We are trained to meet individual students and parent needs. We work with many parents that may have had negative experiences with schooling themselves or have felt biased in the past with their own school. We have parents from other countries that are learning what American education looks like. I believe our training of early childhood and preschool-specific licensure has given me the tools to meet each individual student's and family's needs. Being trained in developmentally appropriate practice allows us to carry out the learning standards for our age group. And while I focus on instilling a love of learning, I also need to be ready each day to meet the social, emotional, and academic needs of my students. It is essential that I have teaching strategies that promote positive behaviors. Teaching preschool is a job like no other. People who choose this as an area of specialization are willing and ready for this age group. They are experts in their practice. Please pass House File 1512 to ensure our youngest learners have highly skilled teachers that receive equal treatment to their colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. And before the two of you get up, I guess we do have a question from the Eden Prairie representative for the Eden Prairie teachers.
So we'll let her ask that, and then we'll move on to others. So Representative Katisa Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, but just a quick comment. So I do represent many of the residents and the students of Eden Prairie, in addition to that, I'm a parent of two little eagles. So I just want to thank you both for, on behalf of the other teachers in the district, for all the work that you do to inspire each of our children every day. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandell, any other testifiers that you have?
I've asked for no other testifiers, okay. But there may be some from the audience. Thank you.
Maybe a couple coming up. Okay. Many thanks to those who just testified. And then if we have folks who want to testify, please identify yourself, and then please begin. Yeah, please.
Good morning, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Kristen Stunkel, S-T-U-E-N-K-E-L, and I'm the Director of Community Education and Communications for Columbia Heights Public Schools. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Community Education Association to share our thoughts on House File 1512. Teacher effectiveness is the most important element of any education program. Teachers achieving licensure is one very important part of that effectiveness. Participating in a teacher certification program ensures that the individual has been educated on effective pedagogy, including curriculum development, student assessment, and teaching strategies to improve learner outcomes. For instance, to prepare for a preschool classroom, a teacher needs to learn how to use play as an effective instructional strategy. Therefore, we are supportive of preschool teacher licensure and House File 1512 if several additional changes are also made so that our current teaching staff is valued and our participating families are supported. First, because licensure has not been a requirement, we have valued professionals working in our classroom that do not have license. Given the proposed timeline, there is no way that those teachers without a license would be able to complete the coursework necessary to be eligible to continue to work. Even with the tiered licensure options that are currently available, we would be required to look for replacement teachers with the appropriate licensure, which could result in unwanted replacement. We ask that these teachers be, quote unquote, grandfathered into the program. If teacher licensure is the direction that the legislature believes in, they will also need to address affordability for all families. The expenses associated with offering a preschool program are no different than K-12 classrooms and, in fact, require additional staffing given the 10-to-1 ratio requirements. Therefore, if preschool teachers negotiate a comparable wage, the cost of preschool will go up. Depending on a family's financial circumstances, they may have to pay for the full cost of preschool. 38% of Minnesota's children are living in households that are at or below the 200% of poverty. These families qualify for financial assistance. That leaves approximately 62% that will pay most, if not all, of the fees. To serve these families, we are committed to keeping fees low because most young families are faced with financial circumstances that limit their ability to afford costly programs. This could result in families having to choose programs that do not require teacher licensure based on affordability concerns. I'm sure we all agree that we want families to be able to choose high-quality early childhood programs for their children in order that our community's youngest scholars get the best educational start. We are happy to work with the author of the bill in an effort to address these questions. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. And then please, sitting to your right, please identify yourself and please begin.
Hi, my name is Valerie Arnquist. I'm the Head Start Director from West Central Community Action, which is located in Mary Franzen District. I have seven counties.
And can you please spell your last name?
Yes, I can. Okay. A-R-N-Q-U-I-S-T.
Wonderful, thank you. And then please begin.
Okay. First, I have to thank Representative Franzen for visiting our center at the Alec Tech College, and we appreciate any visits. Anyway, so dear Mr. Chair and members, I would like to speak on the House File Bill 1512 and its impact on Head Start programs operating in schools and partnership in school buildings. Head Start programs across Minnesota provide comprehensive two-generation programming. I know you know that, but I need to say that. And to support families as they prepare their young children to enter school and life. I always say that ready children come from ready families. And my staff spend easily 30% of their day working with families to prepare children. And I operate 18 classrooms. And my teachers, while many are licensed, many are not. And the Head Start performance standards do not require a licensure. They require a BA or an AA. But we have had successful partnerships in having our staff go back to the online programming, such as Concordia St. Paul offers, for a BA in early childhood. And I just need you to know that the Head Start performance standards, which are federal, do not require licensure. We're certainly not against licensure. We're certainly not against staff being equipped and trained, and they are the key essential ingredient to a successful classroom. It's just that when your staff are too generational, they might suit the area they're serving or hired to if they perhaps also come with a different type of degree, such as I have many staff that have BAs, such as in sociology, and then they also then have 18 quarter credits in early childhood. So many of our areas in rural Minnesota, and I think in the urban area perhaps also, but I'm only familiar with the rural area mostly, we have had an early childhood teacher workforce shortage. And so we start maybe staff that have BAs and other degrees, or we start staff with AAs and support them to get their BA in early childhood. And so we are working with the author of the bill to address this impact that it would have on Head Start co-located in school buildings, because many of our sites are co-located or we co-teach. In my Head Start in West Central Minnesota, we co-teach with early childhood special ed in three-fourths of our classrooms. And so we're working with the authors to what impact this would have on the Head Start that are co-located in school buildings and partnering. And we appreciate efforts to maintain the flexibility to prepare the diverse pool of staff that we need to match our diverse children and cultures that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else in the public who wishes to testify? Okay, we're going to move to member questions. Just a quick pause before we do. Just a note, Representative Damuth had asked about the percentage of pre-K students or families free and reduced lunch, and Ms. Snyder has already given us an answer. Apparently it's been emailed to folks, but I'll simply state it that it's apparently 56% in rural and suburban districts, 75% in charter schools, and 85% in the urban districts. And again, apparently that information was sent to us as well. So we get a real-time answer. So in order, we've got Representative Wasilewicz and Representative Franson. Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill's author or any testifiers that might be able to answer some of these questions, I think one of the main reasons why we have a shortage is one of those reasons is pay. And so I'm wondering if this, so I have a couple questions around that. I'm concerned about folks who maybe can't go back to school or do what they need to do in order to get a license. So those are some folks that I'm concerned about given the shortage. And then also concerned about if folks are licensed, how does pay work? So is that an automatic pay bump? What sort of conversation do we have around that? Because I think requiring folks to be licensed if they have to take additional education and then saying you're also not going to get paid more, I think is a concern. So if you could talk a little bit about those two things.
And Representative Sandell, or you've got somebody joining you up there who may be helping you with it.
I do, Chair Devney and Representative. Those issues are important and certainly were fundamental to the conversation that led to this bill. I have with me an attorney representing Education Minnesota, Nicole Bliesenbach, and she can answer those questions, I think, a little bit more accurately than I can. Thank you.
So if you could please identify yourself as well, your last name, and then continue.
Yes, thank you, Chair. My name is Nicole Bliesenbach. That's spelled B-L-I-S-S-E-N-B-A-C-H.
Okay, and then please proceed.
Okay, thank you, and hopefully I remember the question now. I believe the question, Chair, members of the committee, the question had to do with the making people able to meet the licensure requirement, if that is what the statute does provide. Well, so first of all, I think, you know, you are correct. We have a teacher shortage. This is both a recruitment problem and a retention problem. And one of the ways we solve the shortage is by focusing on retention. And I think in the view of Education Minnesota, one of the best ways to do that is by making the profession, the teaching profession, and here the early childhood teaching profession, more desirable.
And we know that this is an area that has been underappreciated, undervalued. And so adding a licensure requirement does a couple things. First of all, I should say many districts require licenses for their pre-K teachers. We heard St. Paul testify earlier that they require licenses. I believe Eden Prairie requires licenses. So there are many districts that already do that. When a license is required, those pre-K teachers will be included in the teacher bargaining unit, which will then give those teachers a voice in bargaining over their working conditions, which includes their pay and benefits. So that is where they have a voice in doing that, a voice that puts them on the same footing as the other teachers in the district that are required to have licenses, which includes ECFE teachers, early childhood special education teachers, K through 12 teachers, and ABE teachers, all required currently to hold licensure. And in addition, in the pre-K setting or in the early childhood setting, there's even a patchwork of licensure requirements. So for instance, School Readiness Plus funding requires a license. School Readiness funding doesn't. The VPK money doesn't. So even there we have a patchwork. So this kind of puts everybody on the same footing and gives people an opportunity to bargain for those working conditions that govern the working conditions of the people that they're working with, oftentimes in the same classrooms.
Representative Wobsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of follow-up questions. I imagine the licensure for this will be similar to, it will be the same as a tiered licensure, is that correct?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is correct.
Okay. Representative Wobsley.
Final follow-up question.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know if there are programs that help folks go back to school or get the requirements they need to be licensed? I think that's another concern of losing more people because they're not able to meet the licensure requirements and whatever sort of pieces they need to be licensed.
Ms. Blissenbach.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe there are programs, and also, I mean, with the tiered licensure system the way it is, it's set up to give people the opportunity to enter the profession and then work through the tiers at a fairly decent pace that allows for time to do that. So anybody can, the tier one license requires a bachelor's degree. From there, that can be renewed under current law 3 times. A tier two license, there are a number of ways to get to a tier two license currently under law, but the tier two license is a 2-year license that can be renewed 3 times. Tier three is the first tier that requires that you could get to if you have a license. So you have the 3 renewals at tier one, 3 renewals at tier two before you even get to tier three. So there is plenty of time built in for people to start their prep programs, to work through that process. And there are also additional renewals for cause if an individual can show that there might be financial limitations to obtaining that licensure.
Any other follow-up? Okay, Representative Franson.
A comment first, and then I'm just going to listen to the questions before I ask mine. I just want to thank Ms. Arnquist for making the drive down here, and she was not joking when she mentioned that being a dual approach to the Head Start with the partnership with the families. A couple years ago, the tech school offered a facility space for the Head Start to move in there, and it has been an amazing partnership with the tech school, as well with the Head Start and the families. Many of the families are attending the tech school already. And so to see, both students being dropped off at the school together, there was a photo that, I'm not sure if it was a Head Start that had posted it or somebody from the tech school, but the mom and the child walking to class. And it was just so heartwarming and so beautiful. And they do an awesome job in our area. So
that's
once
great.
Again, thank you for making that trip.
Thank you, Representative Franson. And then, no questions, sounds like. Okay.
You
will. Okay. So, good. All right, hold them back. All right, Representative Pryor, I think, is the next. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I'm not sure if it's the author or other testifiers, but when we're talking about compensation, teachers that are not licensed right now, do you know where they stand on receiving benefits? Because I know, as my grandkids started going through different preschool programs, they always lost teachers teachers lost their job because they were pregnant and there was no benefits that they could keep working or come back to work or support themselves during a pregnancy. So, that was one of the reasons, because they were young people and they were, you know, this is something that happens. So where do they stand on benefits, and what would the difference be when they're licensed versus non-licensed?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's going to vary widely amongst the districts. So this bill would require the licensure in public schools. And as I previously stated, if the licensure is required, then they are in the teacher bargaining unit. And if they are, then they would be covered by the terms and conditions of the collective bargaining agreement and can bargain those benefits. So, you know, when they have a voice with the other teachers that they're working alongside, typically those benefits are going to help keep people in the profession, which will hopefully resolve some of that retention problem that we currently have.
Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor, that's really an important issue. And in District 833, where I live, the topic of equal representation in the bargaining unit, equal satisfaction, issues of pay and benefit have delayed contract negotiations, and this bill, I think, will help with it. And I have to say, too, that once the bill is passed, of course, it becomes law, but we're looking for not just an immediate change in things, we're looking for changes that will affect the future of this part of our pre-K-12 education program and attract terrific people to this period of a young child's learning. Thank you.
Just quickly before we move on, maybe Ms. Blissenbach or somebody else, can you give just a sense of the scope of this, sort of those who are teaching in these programs, what proportion are licensed versus unlicensed? I know, you know, 100% of school readiness plus are, for example, because it's required, but like, can you just quickly give a sense of that before we move on to other questions?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am not sure of the exact numbers. I can probably provide you with a list of the schools that currently require licenses, which in that case they would be in the bargaining unit and have all those protections and working conditions. But as far as those districts that do not require licenses, I am not sure how many are and how many are not.
I guess I'm picking up, though, maybe the majority are unlicensed at this point versus licensed, or couldn't even say that.
I don't think, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think that's accurate, because I know, for instance, that of at least one school district that doesn't require a license, but almost everybody teaching in the program is licensed.
So I guess that'd be information I'd be interested in having, I suspect others as well, to sort of how big of a change is this from what's happening on the ground. So, but Representative Heitzman is next on the list. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I understand where we're at with this bill, but I just need some help. So, Representative Sandell, I'd like to better, just if you could confirm for me, what exactly are you trying to accomplish with this bill? I've heard, you know, in the first 2 months, we've had literally, I don't know, maybe a dozen presentations from agencies and from other parts of state government going through the science of why we teach the way we teach, what programs are working, and what information we have to prove how that impact is revealing itself in the numbers. And I've heard nothing to that effect today. I've heard testifiers on one side, I've heard testifiers on the other. I've also heard from our testifier, Ms. Linsbach, that many schools are already requiring, or maybe they already have teachers that are fulfilling what this bill would require. What are you trying to accomplish, and why am I not hearing any science backing up the kinds of rules that you're trying to make statewide?
Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heisman, let me suggest that all of the people who testified today agree that early childhood education is fundamentally important, and that the strong preparation is best in every one of those classrooms. That a program leading to a bachelor's degree with an emphasis in early childhood education is probably the best way to go about attracting and retaining teachers in this area of our of education. And though I don't have studies to provide you, Representative Heitzman, suggesting specific growth among young children, I think that that kind of material is probably available. So first, we want to make sure that people are prepared and with best practices and with a strong foundation to be effective in those classrooms and with young families as well. Second of all, I think we want to be able to find a way to attract teachers to this period of education. Young teachers with some enthusiasm and idealism, older teachers who have great experience and are returning to teaching as a career. And we can do that if we find a way to add them to the bargaining unit and protect their benefits and wages and working conditions. Without that, I think we're going to continue to experience a teacher shortage in this area. I hope I answered you. Ask me again, please.
And I should note, I think there was a testimony earlier from the Educator Policy Innovation Center, or EPIC, who did reference some research that's been done in this area. I believe I'm seeing some nods. So that person could potentially come up. But I'll let Representative Heitzman decide if he wants to do that or whatever else. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We all come to this job representing, you're representing Woodbury. I have Greater Minnesota, a piece of it. And I know that we're not talking about this specific issue, but I'm going to bring it up. I had a number of folks in my office just this last week, folks that typically won't even necessarily vote my way, but are working inside of education, and they're hoping that the reform that we brought to licensure in the previous biennium isn't stripped away. And it sounds like that's something that's being discussed in other committees, not this one. This is early childhood, I understand that, Mr. Chair. But here we have rules that would be imposed statewide that would require school district charter schools meet teacher licensure requirements, when we already heard in testimony that most schools, many schools, are already filling those positions with folks that have that licensure. And then we're also hearing in other testimony how they don't believe they can bring very appreciated, effective teachers up to that level in a timely way. Now, the folks from Education Minnesota are saying, yes, we can, but we're hearing from testimony today that that is going to be incredibly difficult. And we're going to try to apply this rule statewide. And then as I'm asking for, is there information, is there any kind of research? Maybe there is, that's great. But I'm looking at a study from National Academy of Sciences, and they specifically are saying that there is little evidence available on which licensure standards ensure the most effective educators and produce better outcomes for young children. This is a pretty significant study with lots of participants and over a period of a number of, I think, years that this was developed, and maybe we could make this available to the bill author and we could look more closely at this. Maybe there's other research that says the exact opposite, but it does seem that there isn't necessarily consensus on this, and I'm really worried that your bill is going to have a negative effect, especially in areas like mine, where I'm hearing from school districts and from principals saying, we want to give these rules a chance as it applies to K through 12. And then in this case, we're going to make it even more difficult to potentially find folks with the right credentials to teach in school districts and charter schools. So I'm really trying to understand, because your answer, I didn't catch my question being worked on there. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Sandell, and I will point out we've got Ms. Rao up there as well. I believe that was her name from the EPIC Educator Policy Innovation Center. May have information about this. But Representative Sandell, and we'll want to keep it pretty short. So I want to make sure we get to, I know Representative Franson has questions as well. But Representative Sandell, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Heitzman, I hope I can be specific on it. One is that we aren't suggesting any retreat from the tiered licensing program that has been recently established. Second of all, I think that all of us believe that greater preparation in an institute of higher education might provide us with greater skills to be more effective in our classrooms. The third thing is that one of the reasons there probably hasn't been a great deal of research on early childhood education is that the standards of teaching certification or licensure or employment in early education has been so diverse. it's probably been difficult to put that research together. And but I think that that research generally in teaching and accomplishments in the classroom is that that those teachers at any level of schooling have been more effective in the classroom than those without the preparation. I also want to be sympathetic and attentive to issues that, that might be different in metropolitan areas and outstate Minnesota. Attracting teachers to early childhood education is a big job and a difficult job without the benefits and that being part of the bargaining unit provide. And I think that would be beneficial for greater Minnesota as well as it has been in urban areas and suburban areas.
I might ask Ms. Rao if you have something, or maybe if you have information that you can share with the committee to send, if you have something really briefly to say about whether there is research to support the bill or not. Please note that, as I say, if you can do so briefly, please.
Yes, there is in our EPIC paper. It's being finalized, but as soon as it's finalized, I can share that with you all. In my testimony, I stated some of the research very briefly, but there's research in the paper that does show licensed teachers do make a difference.
If you could send, I don't know how soon that paper would be finalized, but even if you could send the research that you have in advance or soon, that would be very helpful. So I want to move to Representative Franson. Representative, if you have something else that you want to say quick or else we'll move to her, we'll do that. Okay, Representative Franson.
Thank you. In 2015, there was a report by the National Academics. The report was called Transforming the Workforce for Children Birth Through Age 8, and they found little evidence that is available on which licensure standards ensure the most effective educators and produce better outcomes for young children. And so I just want to put that out on the record, and that if Education Minnesota is paying for this report, of course they're going to have a report that lines up with their theory that only licensure produces better results, right? So I see this bill more as a union protection job. In 2016, the Pioneer Press wrote an article regarding a Minnesota Court of Appeals case that ruled that instructors in two North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale preschool programs are no longer eligible to be members of the teachers union because the district stopped requiring them to have teaching licenses. So in order to go around this now, this is why this bill is in front of us, correct? So I have some major concerns regard that. And then a couple of questions here. Many families choose not to send their children to preschool, whether or not because they just don't want to or they have other methods. Maybe they're homeschooling those kids themselves. Not every family is from a two-parent household that they both work. One parent may stay at home with that child. So would those children be at a disadvantage being taught by one of the parents rather than going to a school that is licensed?
Representative Sandell or Representative Sandell?
Mr. Chair and Representative Franson, a couple things. I guess I would not suggest that this is a bill which protects the interests of unions. I'd say it protects the interests of teachers and the children in the school districts where a person of greater preparation and background will be attracted and retained. Second of all, the choice of preparing a child for kindergarten and later schooling at home or in a program like this is up to the parent. And some parents, for convenience or for the chance to spend extra time with their child, will choose not to participate. That's up to them. We want to be able to. We want to suggest that people who do participate, all participate, all participants have the opportunity to be part of a top-notch preparation for school and life after that.
Representative Franson.
Okay, so my children did not go to a public preschool education. I was doing child care, but I felt the need, specifically with my own children, right? Like, let's get you out of the house for a couple hours. So they went to what's called our community nursery school, where their grandmother taught for numerous years. What would be the difference education-wise between the kids that would go to a public preschool, public education preschool with a somebody in the bargaining unit compared to, let's say, my children who went to community nursery school that the teachers are not in a bargaining unit?
Representative Sandell or someone else.
Chair Pinto and Representative France. And I think that's one of the great things about our education system in the United States. I've taught in public schools. I've taught in independent schools. I've taught in schools that have a Christian background as well. Those which have charged tuition, those which come from very, in which, of course, I have no tuition at all. And I think that parents make choices. They take a look at the curriculum offered, the facilities available, the direction and history of those programs, and make choices for themselves. Some even choose, of course, homeschooling. That's a part of a democratic society and one in which we cherish education and allow parents to make a great many choices. And I think that's a real strength.
Representative Franson.
Thank you. No, just wanted to get a couple of questions answered, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. I know Representative Bonner had a question, and I actually think we do have time for it if you want to ask Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Sandell. I guess my question was around, I'm still trying to understand and wrap my head around a little bit about how the tiers work, and perhaps I misunderstood, but if I understood correctly, the first two tiers do require education and do require a BA, but do not require licensure. Is that correct?
Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner, that is correct.
Okay.
Representative Bonner. Oh, or Ms. Blissenbach looks like she has something to add. Why don't we let her, Ms. Blissenbach, you got something to add to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tier 1 and Tier 2 are licensed teachers, so that is a license. So they, a Tier 1 licensed teacher would be a licensed teacher for purposes of this bill. And I do want to clarify that this bill doesn't do anything to affect the tier licensure system. This is just requiring, as we do for early childhood special ed, as we do for ECFE, as we do for ABE, and as we do for K-12, that the teachers teaching in these programs with public dollars through VPK, through School Readiness Plus, through School Readiness, are licensed through that tiered licensure system. It's the same as their colleagues.
Okay. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. Okay, so under this new regulation, anyone in any of that tier system would qualify. Is that accurate? Okay.
We're seeing some nodding.
Good. And I know we still didn't get any answers around the what percentage of teachers are out there that are not currently licensed. But I guess could you speak a little bit more to the circumstances under which a teacher might not be licensed? And what considerations you have in the bill for helping them to get where they are. And I guess one of the reasons I'm asking is because I know little ones, you know, when they're at that tender age, they get very attached to their teachers and tend to love them very much. And my concern would be that for some of those teachers who may not be licensed, particularly in some of our rural communities, whether or not there's a path there and what that looks like and how we take care of that, because I certainly don't want little ones to be losing their favorite teacher in the interim. Does that?
And I'm seeing Mr. Nolan from the rural, since there's reference to rural districts, I am seeing him up here. So I guess we'll, with Representative Sandell, if he doesn't mind, we'll have Mr. Nolan provide some thoughts on that.
That's fine. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Chair Pinto, Fred Nolan, MREA. Thank you for the question. I think as you delve into this, you heard the testimony from Val and from Kirsten Stumvall. The question is not, I think you need to divide how many teachers have bachelor's degrees and would then be able to move into the tiered system. How many teachers do not have a bachelor's degree? That's the cohort that are at most at risk. They've invested their career, they've invested training, but they don't maybe have a bachelor's degree to start. That's the number, Mr. Chair, that I think the committee would really need to see the size of this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. And anything Representative Sandell, Ms. Bliss and Buckley, you'd add an answer to the question? We're almost done here, but just want to, okay. Representative Sandell, you all said? Okay. Good. And so, Representative Bonner, I think that we're pretty much out of time. So it's good. But it sounds like there's some information that we'll be looking for in terms of the scope of the issue, et cetera. Representative Sandell will give you the final word on this. And I'll just have a couple housekeeping notes once you're done. But, yeah, Representative Sandell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to each member of the committee for listening to this conversation and discussion. These kind of debates are important, not only to identify the questions, but to be more accurate and complete in the answers. And I'm looking forward to that conversation and discussion. Thank you very much for your
Thank you so much, and to your testifiers, too. And so with that, the bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. So hearkening back to what I said at the beginning, a reminder, members, we're really entering now that this calendar is really starting to squeeze us. We've sent in information about additional hearings. We expect to be recessing on Thursday morning and coming back in the evening for a period of time next Monday and Friday. You should plan on some Monday and Friday hearings, evening hearings, et cetera, that things will be, that there's a definite squeeze going on. So be prepared for that. I want to note, too, tomorrow there is a report coming out from the Office of Legislative Auditor on the Child Care Assistance Program. Right, I know, shocker. Representative Franzen had not tracked that, but it turns out there is. You probably hadn't even realized that, right? So please, members, make sure to review that report carefully. There's going to be a hearing tomorrow afternoon, and so I really urge members to attend that if you can. Watch it. Read the report. We're certainly going to be considering proposals coming out of whatever the findings are, and so let's make sure to be on top of that. So thank you so much. We'll see you Thursday. With that, we are adjourned.